So this is the I-502 recreational marijuana board work session, 8
January 2014 at 10:03. Board of Us, Commissioners, good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, Commissioners. Oliver Ojiako, Community Planning. With me at the table is Gordy Yula, who is the project manager working on this with other staff in my shop. Axel, Dr. Melnick, and from the Sheriff's Office. So what we're going to do this morning is provide the board with some scenarios of what if. We are not proposing any one item for the board to proceed with. There's so many issues that are still outstanding. One is the board had a moratorium which was approved for 6 months in August. Yes, and that moratorium expires, I believe, February 13th or the 14th. So we've done some work engaging the public through a series of open houses. So this will be an opportunity for Gordy and staff to share with the board what we learned through that process, the work, and all the criteria as specified by the Liquor Control Board. So I'll turn it over to Gordy to go over a brief presentation, and then we'll take questions from the commissioners. And don't know whether anyone in the public wants to. So I'll turn it over to Gordy.
Morning, commissioners. Everybody here?
Morning.
We opened up the training room, and even if you can't see, I think this has been wired so that you can hear what's going on if there aren't any seats in the room. So if you have open profile, you can still hear in the back there. So just so you know. I'm Gordy Yula, the director for our county community planning. Project manager, been interesting projects. A brief PowerPoint will kind of bring you up to date on what we've done, what we've heard, and go from there. So, great. So, our purpose today is to provide some background on an issue 502 and then discuss with you some options for recreational facilities and get more direction as to how you want to proceed. So, that is why we are here this morning. Great, so I'm enjoying it. By way of background, marijuana is still illegal under the Federal Controlled Substances Act. Federal government maintains the right to prosecute state-authorized medical marijuana users. We've got some assurances, my understanding is from the Attorney General to the governors in Washington and Colorado that they won't prosecute, but they're keeping an eye on what it is that we're going to do. So, next. As a bit of background, the state adopted an issue 502, or it was adopted by the voters in November of 2012. The Liquor Control Board was given the task of developing regulations for the siting of production processing and retail facilities. Those regulations went into effect on November 16th. They're codified in 314.55 of the WAC. So the Liquor Control Board is in charge of licensing the facilities. The initial license application period closed on September 21st, 2013. Next. Clark County, in terms of jurisdictions, we're responsible for the siting facilities, which is what's bringing us here. Currently, we don't have zoning requirements to allow the siting. As Oliver said, the board adopted a 6-month moratorium on such facilities in August. I believe that was August 13th. So February 13th, the moratorium expires. The board referred to moratorium in October, directed staff to engage the community and prepare some kind of draft or requirements or continue the conversation, I guess. So, yeah. Here's our timeline. We had 4 public meetings. These were all before Thanksgiving. Here's the places we went. We also made a presentation to NAC, that's the Neighborhood Advisory Council of Clark County, on December 9th. Board work session, there's our date today. Our tentative schedule, depending on the outcome of this meeting, your direction will be we have planning commission. It's on the schedule for February, and we'll come back to you in March. So, next. We took to the public meetings, basically some different kinds of land use options. The WAC allows for both indoor and outdoor growing, and it's very specific about prohibiting facilities within 1,000 feet of these entities. And so the question we asked with the sort of large postcard we handed out that people could fill in, where do we allow production facilities, where do we allow processing facilities, where do we allow retailing facilities? So, next slide. The WAC allows hours of operation from 8 a.m. to midnight, and we asked people what they thought of that. The WAC allows symbols to be used in any kind of advertising. So we asked about signage, should we ban signage altogether? Should there be spacing requirements between facilities? Should facilities be co-located? That is, should you be able to grow and process at the same location? And then we asked about should there be general requirements for any kind of industrial development? Those things related to noise, glare, smoke, odor, et cetera. These are things that are currently in Title 40, which they're standard for any kind of industrial development. So next slide. 54 people responded. We had 54 attendees at the open houses. There's the information. Retail facility zones, this was the information that came back to us. All the commercial zones, business park, and two rural commercial zones, that's CR1, CR2. Production facilities, the two industrial zones, FR40, resource lands, and rural center commercial, and urban reserve. Processing facilities, all commercial, all industrial, business park, resource lands, R5, R1020. This is the information we got back from the open houses. So, next slide. Ban signage.
No, based on the survey.
The ban signage was to ban symbols in advertising. Was no, but that's required for WAC, so we really didn't need to ask because that's already a WAC requirement. There was preference for no distance between facilities. There was certainly a strong interest in co-location facilities. People wanted to be able to grow and process at the same location. And looking at the list of applications, you can see a number of them that are repeated in both places. Hours of operation were fine for retail. That is meet the WAC limits, so from 8 a.m. to midnight. So next slide. This data differs from a little bit from what was in today's Columbian. This is based on the Liquor Control Board website as of December 31st. There were 107 production license applications, 82 processing, 106. This is all Clark County. In unincorporated Clark County, the numbers are on in the right-hand column. So 71 to produce, 48 to process, and 35 to retail. Clark County will get 6 retail licenses at the end of the day. So obviously, there'll be some kind of lottery to determine who those people are. So here's our contact information. Again, I adapted this from our public involvement, our public outreach presentation. And to answer a couple of questions that the board asked in board time, I checked with Brian Smith, the Liquor Control Board. The answer to the question of will the Liquor Control Board reallocate licenses to city or elsewhere if the county would ban, the answer is no. So that was one. The other question that came up was can we list school bus stops? The information we got back from Vancouver was it's not practical. It's impractical to include that. I have an email from the Vancouver School District, and I believe the battleground response was we'll send somebody to the work session. So hopefully there's somebody here to answer that question if you want to pursue that avenue. So that's all we have. We're here to answer questions and
yes, let's talk about that.
Okay, the maps are they're over here again. These are a set of what-if scenarios. What we did on these maps, and it's a little hard for you to see at this distance, we can actually pull these up. You want to see them on the screen. For production in the middle, if we were allowed production in resource land, Ag 20 and FR 40 and rural 5 to 20, This is the area in green is where you can end up with a production facility, and that includes the 1,000-foot buffer around the areas that are specifically designated for processing. Because the overwhelming feedback we got at the open houses was to allow production and processing, this essentially is the same now. What we learned through the process, and I've had some conversation with King County, there's two different types of processing. One is essentially your industrial processing and non-industrial processing. So for processing at this temperature, non-industrial, I think that we would want to limit industrial processing to an industrial area or a commercial area or a business park. And you can't see it at this scale, but up here on we had this mapped. Any place that has an A on here, it looked like a teepee at this distance, is an address that for which there's an application. And then the same thing over here on retail. We limited this, I think, to industrial property and commercial property, not to include neighborhood commercial. So that's what these maps represent. Again, they are what ifs. They're not gospel. You haven't spoken yet, but we just put these up again for general purposes.
So, Gordy, the A's where there are applications. So, say they're outside an area that is contemplated for appropriate zoning. Is the license transferable by location? So if I end up getting a license and I win the lottery and I'm one of the six that wins and gets a license, is that license specific to the address or is it specific to the owner of the license?
I don't know,
Commissioner.
Could you bring it?
We got like five people that hold on. Go ahead. They're looking at the 12th ward, understand that there's a lot of decisions to be made as to where these places can be. So they understand that they might be approving licenses for people at places where they're not supposed to be, and they will be transferred.
Okay.
So they do have a process in place where they do transfer locations if necessary, as long as it's in the same area.
$75.
For $75, they'll transfer. Cool. Got it. Thank you. Okay. Appreciate it. All right. Cool. Thanks.
Commissioners, that's all we have, and we'll take questions.
So, Ashley, do you have anything to share or add?
No, other than whatever your questions might be, I've obviously kept up on the research and been watching what's going on. I think the big things unfolding right now in the state have to do with local jurisdictions' ability to ban or how extensively they can regulate this, and whether or not the state law preempts them. Doing that, so I've done kind of a lot of research and follow up on that. And currently, we're awaiting the State Attorney General Ferguson to issue an opinion on whether or not he believes, in his opinion, local jurisdictions have that authority or not. So that might give us a little bit of information early this year. Other things going on, as recently as today, there was an article that they've re-updated the amount of marijuana they think will be needed to satisfy the need for I-502 implementation. I think they did a study, there was a Seattle Times article about that. And they've also started to struggle, I think, with the Liquor Control Board with how many actual applications they've got to grow. I think right now they're estimating they've got an overabundance of applications to produce marijuana, and I think they're struggling with how to deal with that because I think I read something like they think they have 10 times more applications than they may need for the square foot limit they put on themselves within the relax or the law. So I don't know if they're going to up that square foot limit and allow more growing or not, or just maybe switch that to some kind of lottery system. I don't know how they'll deal with that issue. So there's all kinds of stuff going on with this right now, and I think all kinds of local jurisdictions are trying to decide how to implement it and deal with it.
I heard the number six. So when we talked about our county would be given six, is that growing?
No, that's for retail and commercial.
Retail. Correct.
There's no limit on the number of production or processing applications.
Then the other question I was concerned with, there had to be some oversight. I know that the liquor board has a way of regulating who's going to be in charge of oversight and regulation locally. Does that burden fall back on our sheriff's department?
Good morning, commissioners. I attended some meetings with WASDA, the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs, where the Liquor Control Board addressed that issue. The Liquor Control Board still hasn't resolved that entirely. They have limited police authority in the state. They made application to for their agents to have general police authority. That's still caught up in the legislature and through a number of different functions. The Liquor Control Board has asked the Washington State Sheriffs and Police Chiefs to cooperate with them and to assist them in terms of dealing with issues surrounding licensed locations. And of course, that is met with some mixed results in that all agencies around the state are similar to this to we are here, and that staffing remains a big problem. And so the Liquor Control Board has primary responsibility for the licensed sites themselves, and they will address that through whatever mechanisms they have. But they have indicated they will ask for local law enforcement assistance if needed. What that looks like will depend upon priorities and staffing levels.
I know that there's multiple levels of taxation that are considered as part of Initiative 502, and I frankly don't remember what they were for production, processing, retail, and I know there's a state share and a local share. Has there been any conversation about, I mean, what is the local share of that, and is that something that would be expected or could go for enforcement, or is there money specifically set aside as part of the taxing scheme at the state level for enforcement? Do you know, Axel?
Yeah, so the answer is no, and I think that's a problem for all of us as counties and cities, and it's something that we've teed up on our legislative agenda for this year, because as we know, it's taxed 25% at each step. But the way it works is, and it's actually quite a wrinkle and it's changed, is that, you know, it's estimated to bring somewhere around $1.5 billion in revenue. And of that, the state, the I-502 itself, the state law splits up very specifically where that money can go and where it can be spent. Needless to say, none of that comes back to local government except for through some grant programs that our Department of Health could apply for.
So there's no share of the taxation that's local share?
We would get our share of any added sales tax that we would normally get from it to sale of anything that's taxable. But outside of that, no. We don't get any direct money back from the added taxes on marijuana sales. Now, we are going to work, I think, on that a little bit this legislative session, because obviously there's local law enforcement needs and other things. And 50% of all of that tax was going to go back into the state's basic health plan. And as we know, with the implementation of the health care law, we don't have the health plan anymore. So the state's going to have to come up with somewhere for that 50%, which is a lot of money to go. So I think we're hoping to be part of that conversation as local government.
Yes, I mean, we look at the maps here, and you know, around here. Are we okay? Mm-hmm. When it comes to location, I'm curious if the sheriff's office has any, or the public health, Dr. Alan Millman, if you feel like there's anything about those maps that we should consider that somehow they're not reflecting.
One of the things that we need to consider is that if there, one of the concerns we have is that these retail facilities may be disproportionately located in low-income minority neighborhoods, and that if they're going to be sited somewhere, they should be sited in a way that they're spread equitably through the area, not just in one particular location, impacting one particular community.
We've been working with planners all along on this particular project and have reviewed the lot and have provided input into what we feel regarding the restrictions of WAC. the proposed zoning issues that are being worked on, incorporate those. The lack, I think, is pretty sufficient. The biggest concern that we had was recreation facilities and what that encompassed, and I think that we've addressed that pretty well, too. And I've been told that the event center has been added to the list because I wasn't sure if that specific site was excluded. So we're comfortable with what the lack states at this point.
Yeah, I'm curious. Chris Horn here. If the low-income, more vulnerable population, if there's something that can be done to address that or legally, so that whatever we do needs to be legally defensible as much as practical.
Microphone.
I'm not usually one that has a problem with microphones. To the extent that the county includes items that are not expressly in the WAC and exercises its direct police power authority, either under the Constitution or under state law, is going to be a function of the reason that we enact these laws. And so we know that whenever we enact police power regulations that are somewhat different from the state, we're in a position where we may need to explain why. So the federal government, for example, to address your specific concern, the federal government has listed a number of priorities and reasons why. And one clarification, by the way, with regard to the federal government and the U.S. Attorney's statement about whether it would assert preemption in any particular state, they have not said it's legal, they have not said it's authorized, and they have not said that anybody is protected from federal prosecution, regardless of whether they're in compliance with state law. What they've said is that we have, that it has, that they have priorities, and to the extent that this doesn't jeopardize their priorities or is consistent with their priorities, that they will not enter into the field, or they do not anticipate entering into the field of local enforcement within the state. So, for example, one of those is prevention of distribution to minors. If you have it concentrated in areas disproportionately, and if they feel that that jeopardizes or causes an increased risk of distribution of marijuana to children, that jeopardizes their priority, and they could step in, number one. And if the county chose to restrict a particular area because you thought that that might cause us an inconsistency with federal priorities, my sense is that you could enact a regulation that would restrict those areas to ensure that we're consistent with federal priorities and we would be properly using our police power. So yes, I think that there are circumstances in which we can enact laws that are somewhat expansive from the states and still be defensible.
So one of the priorities is preventing drug driving and the exacerbation of other adverse public health consequences associated with marijuana use. Would you consider, you know, your guidance as part of that that larger priority that the federal DOJ had put forward? Or?
Well, there is an association between marijuana use and impaired driving, and
I'm talking about the impaired driving part. I'm talking about the other adverse public health consequences, which is a really broad category that you could put the kinds of disparate impacts that you had already stated. It seems like they would fit within that.
Yes.
Okay.
So I assume that the writing of the ordinance, that Chris, you're intimately involved in that process, that our public health and our sheriff's office would be giving the suggested intent, and then you would end up with the wording as best you can come up with to be specifics, so that when this comes, when this basically that formulation process includes your concerns. One of the dangers I think we need to be able to steer clear of is confusion when it comes to the sheriff's office, knowing what's legal and what's not legal. How do you know if you get a call, whether or not you're responding to something that is okay or something that really needs to be enforced? How do you sort that out, and what can we do to be able to make sure that is very clearly defined, we don't frustrate you, and yet there's a clarity both for the citizens as well as the sheriff's office?
Well, it's complicated, as you can well imagine, and it really boils down to the information that's provided to CRESTA at the time we receive phone calls or through other information sources, and then it's just a matter of looking at information and making an evaluation on regarding response levels, whether or not the information is credible, not credible, what the risk factors are. We do that for every call already, and so it's really just a matter of employing those same kinds of principles into to call triaging and determining what we do, and it's what we do with every call. So.
In order to for that process to happen, whatever it comes down to the wording of an ordinance, right?
Well, the wording of the ordinance is what gives us the tool to respond to or take action in whatever in particular instances. Absence of an ordinance that's specific in that limits or restricts or guides citizens as to their conduct, then we have to fall back to state law and yeah. what it says.
If I might follow up on that, so I guess that's my question is, what we're being asked to do is basic land use regulations, and I shouldn't say basic, but land use regulations setting the underlying form of where something may go. So from our perspective, from a state, from a county code perspective, it seemingly would be as simple as, is it, you know, is the location of the call, is it coming from a licensed facility, you know, and was that licensed facility placed in an area that the code allowed? But from a state perspective, you talked about the conduct. Seems like that's all going to be coming from the WAC. And from the state level, as far as are they conducting their business in a way that comports with the state guidelines? And I mean, I assume that you've had that conversation with the association at the state level of how you're going to be able to manage all of that, and have the WACs started addressing the kinds of clarity that you're going to need to say, are they conducting themselves within the framework of state law and these priorities? Because we can't do conduct. That's not our piece.
I think it's important to differentiate between two specific areas here. One is the activities of the licensee and whether or not they're conforming with the rules that are established by the Liquor Control Board through WAC and everything. The inspections, enforcement, actions, that's all the purview of the Liquor Control Board. And they made it very clear that they intend to continue in that process like they do with licensed establishments now related to alcohol, spirits, and things like that. When I speak of conduct, I'm speaking more specifically of what would be categorized as criminal conduct. And that's where the authority to share it is, and then we would be responding to allegations of any criminal conduct specific to those sites or in the region around them. And there's a number of different concerns that we have, security being a very high concern. When I speak of security, I'm talking about site security. Do we require them to have high-definition cameras in place that record 24 hours a day, that require them to keep the recording for a certain amount of time in the event that they're a victim of a crime themselves, or someone would break in or something, or the activity of patrons, is it conducive to them going off to a park to consume in a public place, and what kind of impacts? Those would be the areas that we would be concerned with.
So it would be really helpful, because I'm hearing some of these things are going to be state criminal code kinds of things. Some of them, like you just said, would we allow it in a park or whatever? That might be a county code thing. It would be really helpful, I think, from my perspective at least, to know, all right, what areas of the county code might we adopt to address potential criminal activity or otherwise that we can reasonably foresee and that we can get guidance so that you have clarity from a county perspective, and then obviously then there's state criminal code and federal criminal code issues as well that are beyond our control on this. But it'd be really good to kind of say, all right, what are the things that we need to lock down other than just a map? What other things should we be thinking about?
We've had conversations along this line, and our needs prior to this, and security, obviously traffic, neighborhood impacts, what this map reflects now is our commercial zones, which tend to exclude a lot of the concerns because of the fact that there's not neighborhoods, there's not schools, and there's not those kinds of things typically that would be concerned with in those commercial zones. It's kind of a catch-22 in that there's not a real location, there's a security concern. Minimizing them, of course, is what our goal is. And
Like I said earlier, I think the lack is pretty clear and pretty significant. As we begin to walk down this road, obviously we're going to learn lessons as we move along and but primarily, you know, my biggest concern is security around sites, whether it be a retail site, a processing site, or a production site, because I believe that they are you know, red flag targets potentially for people who want to burglarize, rob, or whatever, and those folks. And you know, we have an obligation to protect your property interests of those establishments as well. Traffic concerns, you know, we talked yesterday or Monday about the I-5 corridor and the traffic that we potentially anticipate would be coming across the river, at least in the short term, depending on what Oregon eventually does. I likened it to the blackjack fireworks stands and the experience that we see during around the 4th of July with traffic congestion, fights, a number of different activities that create a challenge for us. Along that I-5 corridor again, the 4th of July season. So I kind of see a similar kind of concern, not to the concentration because it's not limited to days, but that would, you know, those concerns are there for us as well. And then I also mentioned overflow activities. How conducive is a site to permitting folks to, you know, wander away, or, you know, we talked about the potential of hookah bars or things like that, and what kinds of impacts of those are. But we've been speaking about it.
The reason, for the same reason that schools don't allow controlled substances to be located within 1,000 feet, the reason being that you've got large groups of students who haven't necessarily developed the mature judgment to be able to not mess up their lives there in that location. But at the same time, we have bus stops that are out there collecting these students, and some of these locations are, you could have 10, 20, 30 students right down the street from a retail outlet. And I'm curious if we have a representative from a school district transportation here that would give us some insight that would help us, you know, if they have some concerns, should there be some areas that are defined? Because I understand that school bus routes can change, and so the question is, well, does that mean that we just don't do anything at all? And any bus stops, especially those that have been there for years, that have large numbers of students, or do we end up picking some locations that are pretty reliable, that should be on the map?
That's a good question. Do we have anybody here from any of the school districts that would like to come on up here and take a place at the mic and share any questions or answers? I'm not seeing anybody.
One concern, if I can come on the school bus stops, that we've discussed is they change many times a year, and there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of that throughout the county. And if a permit is given for a site today, there may be a school bus stop that falls within 1,000 feet of that site next year. Then what we do? Because in regular bus stops, they're pretty solid. They don't move much with school bus stops. But they're kind of, it's a shifting target. And the question becomes, how do you answer?
I think one way to look at that would be that high density housing will not change. Those high density housing will remain there, and that we have some cases in highly populated areas. When the school bus pulls up and stops, they fill the school bus up, and off to the school they go. That site will never change unless you tear down all the houses. So there'll be some that would be more permanent than others.
Well, one question I think would be valid is to see if there's any school bus stops in those green zones, because those are all pretty predominantly commercial, and typically school bus stops are in residential areas, which wouldn't have these establishments to begin with. And right. So I'm not sure how much of a conflict there, or how much of a frequency there will be just by that.
So my other concern would be, and question would be, high crime area. Would we be fair to consider those as not a good site for retail?
Yes.
Well, I think so. There's a certain amount of logic there, but I think you also have to analyze the type of crime that exists. For example, one of our highest crime or call load locations is in Green Zone in Mid-Hazeldale. And so the question then becomes more of a social issue, is are you contributing to additional problems in that particular area? I don't have an answer to that. I'm not a sociologist, but I can tell you that the types of calls that we receive in those high crime areas or high call load areas are very diverse. A lot of alcohol-related kinds of calls, whether or not we've seen an increase with the retail having close by or not, I really don't know. I can't speculate.
I just assume that during this process, when we're formulating some kind of a local county code for this, that we would be very actively receiving the feedback from public health, from the sheriff's office, from the school districts, to make sure everybody is heard and informs our prosecuting attorney's office, our staff here, so that we can at least include those that feedback.
We're doing it.
Yeah, we are literally doing that.
No,
I just want to say that in the WAC, we required to have an 8-foot barrier. All production, all processing, 8-foot barrier. Either in an unincorporated area, as Dylan said, the bus stops change the weather. But because of that 8-foot barrier, which is specifically so children and everybody else can't see what's going on, I just want to throw that out there, because if I'm 7 years old or 15 years old and I'm getting off a bus, there's an 8-foot fence. I'm probably not going to see that operation. So
I don't think we're worried about the operation. I think we're worried about consumption or availability.
Me too.
Kirby, you have a question over here.
Well, no, I'd just like to add to the, I spoke with Woodland Schools. I'm from Woodland, and they told me to speak on behalf of Woodland. And there's a few bus stops. I've been there for over 50 years as a transit station.
Yes.
And there's a lot of children on this transfer station.
But the transit station's covered already, isn't it?
And I believe the doctor Hansen was here at the last meeting and spoke on it from the center. And Mr. Green from Woodland are very concerned on this particular place because it is a transfer station.
So those, I think those are kind of the point that I'm aware of what we call a transfer station, or just a high density. A loading station that could definitely be considered. And another hand up.
I have a question. I was just going to say, we was talking about the 8-foot barrier or fence and stuff, but what we're talking about there, as far as we say, is it's outdoor throw. Most of us use it in outdoor throw, indoor throw. So
they're
all kinds of cameras. You have to go for a secure background check?
I don't think we're there. I think that we have a whole bunch to consider along the way. And I know that this is coming up before the Planning Commission here in the very, very near future. More input. There's a whole bunch that I personally don't understand to its fullest. The real concern with regulation, how we're going to pay for our responsibility. If the state is going to tax it along the way, I get concerned with over taxation and defeating the purpose of making something like that illegal to get the illegal stuff off the road. I get concerned with that. It's just a whole bunch of unanswered questions.
There's a part that's being. Hold on. This is a work session. Yeah. Get a chance to testify, I promise you.
Yeah.
Not today.
So, yeah.
I promise you. So $500 million allocated to the education of our children to ignore those doors. That's, people are missing the part of that. Where's the money going? So we're actually going to educate our kids to stay away from those shops through the taxes that us
I think that down the road that would be addressed along the way, and sometimes it's not all about the taxes or taxes for profit or taxes for government. It's about taxes to regulate and control And those are some of the things I'm hearing from our sheriff department, that we don't have all those answers yet. And as we work through this and through the planning commission, we hope to have and learn more as we come back and forth. We try to make a decision as to whether or not we can have location for the siding.
And can we, so what are the next steps? I mean, the reason I said, sir, is that we'll be getting public testimony at the Planning Commission on this, and the Planning Commission gives us advice on what we would do, then we will have a public hearing, we will take public testimony at that point. That this is a work session to give us an opportunity as a board to figure out, all right, where do we even start? You know, where do we start with this? And so my question is, you know, what is the recommendation of where we go next?
The we're looking for direction about how you want us to proceed, and how you want us to proceed is what we should draft some language that says we're going to allow these facilities or not allow these facilities. And you could use these maps as a starting point and say go to the planning commission and get their input, or you could say we're not going to consider these at all and we can proceed down that path. So we're looking to you tell us how you want to proceed. We'll take whatever you want us to plan eventually. But what is it that you want us to take to the planning commission?
I don't think that we have enough knowledge to know what role the county actually is able to play in our part of the state law.
Our job, Commissioner, is to cite, allow the siting or not allow the siting of these three kinds of facilities. We have land use. At least that's the purpose of this work session.
And that's why I'm going to that word, is that we need more information to decide whether or not we're going to allow or disallow, that we're going to be able to control, provide safety, provide the necessary infrastructure to support this in a manner that our county will help to participate. So, I think, personally, I'd like to see us move forward to have a better understanding and go to the Planning Commission as to what is our role, what is our enforcement role, what is our educational role, what are the other list of locations that we're concerned with as we go down this road, as to where we might locate different sites.
Commissioners, we if I may quickly, we can do that, and I'll let the commissioner speak on what direction they would like to take. There are other counties that have adopted something that we can look at and see what direction that they've gone on this. Everyone is really studying and looking at many ways to address a complex issue. We can look at those ordinances and see whether there's anything in it that we can borrow and see how, through the public process, what may be comfortable in adopting and going through the process and hearing from the public as well. I agree. I think we didn't come to say this is one direction that the board can follow because we know this is very complex. The legal counsel will be advising us throughout the process to see we have some ideas of the type of land use code that we can put in place. Again, looking at what other counties have done, there are options to ban subject to some conditions. There are different ways that the board can go on this, but let's draft something and put it out there and begin to look at what other restrictions we can be more restrictive than what the work allows.
So just a quick question and a thought on this. So the question I have is the moratorium that we have in place ends in February, correct?
Yes.
So my anticipation would be, given that it's January, that even if we were to move something to the Planning Commission, it would be unlikely that we would be able to adopt an ordinance, a comprehensive ordinance, by the time the moratorium was going to expire. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay.
So part of our path forward is going to be, depending on what you advise us to do, would be to extend the moratorium. We need to cover a...
Well, at the very least, it seems like that we're going to need to be taking that step, no matter what we do, because adopting a comprehensive ordinance is going to take longer
right.
than the moratorium.
yes.
is in place. Or is that fair?
That's fair, Commissioner.
And then and the second piece is that, well, I think it was it Tacoma, Pierce County, move forward with ideas for a map and all of this and regulations and considerations and things to be thinking about and all of that. But they also included a caveat at the bottom of their ordinance that says specifically, you know, none of this takes place unless there is reclassification at the federal level. There are, whether it be a caveat that says that or whether it be a caveat that says, well, until we hear from the state attorney general that we can't, you know, sum it out of existence or whatever be the case, it seems like a good idea to at least get more information and get feedback from people on and give them something to look at to say, all right, are there school bus stops? Are there things that are in these zones that everybody, that staff has looked at and these town hall and these open houses have looked at that might be a problem that we haven't thought of? And what other things within the ordinance could we do to limit disparate impacts on low-income communities or areas of high, you know, existing high crime? And be at least getting that information, getting it to the Planning Commission so we can hear from the public on it, as well as from the Planning Commission. So I'd love to see that, at least take that step forward on it.
So I think
we'll hold on.
Okay.
I can wait to your son.
No, what I'm hearing is I think we come back to the board quickly.
We haven't heard from the whole board yet.
But yes, but I agree that I'll wait and hear from Commissioner Maduro.
Okay. Just to make sure that the February 13 date doesn't come and go, there is public notice required for us to go get this on the agenda and make sure that we can schedule an extension of the moratorium until we get this thing finished and defined. So we want to make sure that doesn't catch us unaware. So we want to make sure that happens. The other part of that, Commissioner Stewart, referred to the Pierce County, that section of the language that ensures that whatever obligations we have to uphold federal law, that we include that here. Otherwise, we risk making county staff accessories to federal crime. We want to make sure that whatever prosecuting attorney's office who exists to help protect us all from being sued and also from violating the public health of our citizens, to make sure that language is there. We're all sworn to uphold state law and federal law. So we make sure that if there's something there that says that we can do our part, but we also need to respect federal law.
Oh, I commend my counterpart for having some great ideas. Would that enough give you some direction to move forward with the ideas? I love, I bring up this, but what Pierce County is doing, and that's saying, let's move forward with seeing what we can do along the way to avoid those hurdles. But the kind of caveat at the end is that we still have to answer to some of the federal numbers, we think. But we still have to be prepared and to see what we might be looking at if we get past all the hurdles. So
the question is, my question is, do you want us to develop draft language that includes what Commissioner Dorsey suggested?
I think that
get on the grid and move forward to
get the language. And also the staff, that we've got to be prepared to go ahead and extend a moratorium. It's very obvious that we're not going to have this in place in time at the end of our moratorium. But the fact that we're moving forward with this and
so extend the moratorium, get that on hearing before February 13th.
Yep.
Draft the language, get it out there on the grid to let people respond.
Yeah.
To include the language from Pierce County to let them hear.
Yes, and I would make sure that whatever gets published out there in that grid, that there's one source of data, and that's a prosecuting attorney's office. Because we want to make sure that we get this right and it passes the Chris Horn test.
Right. Well, because you raised a really interesting question. You talked about how the feds may not preempt the field, which is legalese for there may not be federal law that supersedes the state law. The supremacy clause says, well, you know, the feds can preempt the field of regulation of this, or they cannot. And so I'm curious to know a little bit more about, you know, whether your reading is that as you're saying, well, we may not preempt the field if you meet these eight priorities of ours. And we don't have to argue right now. I'm curious about that. Some more information I'd love to get on that piece of it, as well as the state attorney general that we expect to get an opinion from, because we have responsibilities to the state as a functionary agent of the state, that if the state says, yeah, we're in control of you and you cannot zone this out of existence, that's an interesting legal question of then what do we do with the feds and the state. And so, yeah, I would love to have you, and I guess the short of this, love to have you involved in coming up with something that would even go to the funding commission.
I'll provide some analysis of whether or not, I don't think it's a question of whether the federal government has preempted the controlled substances area. They have. The question is, are they going to assert it? And they're saying, we're just not going to assert it at this time. But I'll provide that analysis.
So, I probably asked my high tech commissioner over here. My emails lighten up concerned citizens saying, I'm not here, not there. I'm getting the same ones saying, allow this, not allow that. Is there a possibility that have some place that can get public comment inserted into county website that can be accessed and shared by the commission?
You get it on high tech.
No, I turned over to this guy.
I'm
turn on my phone. So we want information. We want as much information. We don't want to overlook anything if we could possibly avoid it. So all ideas are good ideas.
Maybe light up the map with little red flags of where we do know there's one of those transfer stations that might be, or something, you know, something that lets us know that there is a potential concern with a specific location.
I would not suggest that the county host a forum for public debate on this. There are plenty of options out there for people looking for others to have that
forum
without us being just
comment
or
commentary.
I think we can let our community support that on their own, and we can provide the factual information that they can all then discuss openly.
All right.
That's maximizing the freedom of speech, just let the public speak without us having to be the authority or the host or the moderator of it.
Okay. Thank you. Just one more thing, commissioners. This PowerPoint presentation is on the website. Yeah, we all agree also, we do not make copies for today's meeting, so they didn't, it was supposed to be on Friday. So,
do we know the date of the planning commission?
If we went in February, the work session would be February 6th, and the planning commission hearing could be February 20th, which would be the normal planning commission nights.
Anything else from the panel? Anything else from the board?
Yes, I would just make sure that whatever information, as we define locations on the map, applicants or whatever information can be laid out on the map, and the process of the ordinance draft going forward, that the place to check would be on the grid, and we would update that, not just simply freeze it in time, but update that also as we proceed through this process.
Okay. I think we're done. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you
all. Thank you all for being here. Thank you. All the interest.
Let's go. All right.